With nearly 5,000 specialists dedicated to supporting dealer financial services, Ally has the expertise to help you with your retail finance, F&I, and remarketing needs. We're all better off with an Ally. Contact your local Ally account executive to get started today. Ally, do it right.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to this weekend drive edition of Daily Drive for the last week in March 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today, we're breaking down some of the biggest stories in the auto industry from the past week and looking forward to what's in store in the days ahead. Today on the show, our own Carly Schaffner joins us to talk about Hyundai's big presence at the New York Auto Show.
One of the biggest announcements that they made, aside from the vehicles that we saw, was their intention to create a high-performance sub-brand, and they're calling it Magma.
That's coming up in a few minutes, but first, Jamie, how you doing?
All right, Kel, good to see you.
I know you and Carly dove into a very, very deep conversation about how pretty much the New York Auto Show was the Hyundai show, but something stood out to me this week because we had Randy Parker, the CEO of Hyundai Motor America, on our LinkedIn Live.
I don't want to give away too much, but we're working on another product as we speak. Let's just say it's going to be in the range of $25,000 or less in the EV space. So that's all I'm going to say today, because I don't want to give away a future auto show opportunity, right?
And he said something, Jamie, that caught my ears, and I think it caught yours too. Now, he didn't confirm anything, but he did say that Hyundai may be in the process of developing an affordable EV. Now, Jamie, do you think that more automakers are open to creating an affordable EV, especially on the heels of BYD having a presence in Mexico? And we know eventually they'll make their way to the U.S. Do you think this is partly in response to that?
Absolutely. It's not only in response to it, but is absolutely partly in response to the Chinese competitive threat. You know, the Chinese automakers are so much farther along on this electrification journey. More advanced batteries, cheaper vehicle builds and all that. We also know, I mean, everyone around the world is trying to get to an affordable EV, at least everyone, you know, who's serious about trying to survive, right? We know that Hyundai's sibling brand, Kia, has said they're working on one. So naturally, you know, Hyundai would have one as well, but Stellantis and Ford, Tesla is very actively at work on, people call it the Model 2, but we expect that to come out next year. You know, to hit the kind of ambitious EV growth targets that automakers are looking for, they need more affordable vehicles. They can't just be selling $40,000 and $50,000 crossovers. If they can get down to something that's under $30,000, I think it's going to really pull the market, really reshape the market here in the U.S.
I agree. And with that said, you spoke also this week with Jeremy Papin from Nissan. And now, Jamie, hear me out here. Nissan's midterm plan for the next 3 years, just to me, seems really, really aggressive. Globally, they want to launch 30 new models over the next 3 years, 16 electrified vehicles and 14 ICE vehicles. Jamie, now they can't even get their best-selling Rogue off of lots. Do you think they maybe slightly, not a lot, but slightly maybe biting off a little more than they can chew?
I'm not too worried about it. I feel like, for the U.S., it's, I think only 7 of those new models will be for this market. They have a pretty complete lineup as it is. They need to build out the EV offerings for, instead of just the Leaf and the Aria. They want to add a lot more there, of course. What's interesting to me, looking to grow sales by 1 million vehicles, but only 165,000. So what's that, about 1/6 of that would be in the U.S., which is probably its biggest market by volume. So that tells me they're looking at really a global push, probably especially in some of the less developed markets there in Southeast Asia. So, we'll see how it turns out. you know, the Rogue thing, having 2023 Rogue still around in March is really suboptimal, but they, you know, there were delays in getting the 24 launched and some lumpy deliveries. It looks like they're doing what it takes to flush those out. Obviously, if they have inventory problems throughout the year, they're going to have all kinds of problems.
Right, because I don't want Nissan to end up like this next company, okay, Jamie? So unless you've been underneath a rock, all right, the last few weeks, Fisker has been in the news with rumors of the possibility they may file for bankruptcy. This week, Automotive News reported that Fisker is dramatically slashing the price of its top-end version of the Ocean crossover by 39%. Now, with that kind of price cutting, are we in the middle of the end? Because we're definitely past the beginning of the end. Or is this just one final push by the company? I don't think there's really any coming back from this. Do you agree?
There could be a chance. You may well be right about the middle of the end. I mean, look, here it's early Friday afternoon as we're recording this. By the time people hear it on Saturday, the news could have changed. There could be a filing, you know, late this afternoon or early this evening. Could come early next week. My sense, and I, you know, as soon as I say this out loud, it's going to go the opposite way. So I cast the fates to the wind. But you know, they announced that they got $150 million investment from an existing investor. I think this move to sell, you know, as many of the vehicles as they can at fire sale prices is a way to try to get some more cash on hand. They're not really building cars right now, so shouldn't be a whole lot of money going out the door. So it looks to me like what they're trying to do is get enough cash, pare back their operations, and try to keep along while they look for maybe another savior, you know, whether it's private equity or a big automaker that maybe likes the Fisker design, likes its low carbon, you know, approach to car making. But it's a tough market to try to do that in, and it's going to be really hard to recover.
Well, and the other thing, Jamie, not to be negative or the bearer of bad news, but it doesn't help after that Consumer Reports report of the Ocean.
Yeah, Consumer Reports, it was a really devastating review. And, you know, it is so influential. Maybe not exactly right with the EV buyers, but, I mean, you, as we know, I've been doing this a long time. I can remember earlier in this century, being at an event in Detroit, and maybe it was for someone else's study, you know, but one that gets a lot of headlines. And I mentioned to a person who was there, from one of the automakers, I said, "So this is a pretty important study, right?" He's like, "The only one we really care about is Consumer Reports because it moves the metal. So if Consumer Reports is the one that really speaks for what consumers think or helps consumers know what to think, this is a bad review for them."
Ah, Fisker's on sale for everybody. Jamie, we have another email from a listener yet again on Automotive News' decision to no longer classify Tesla as a luxury brand. Now, Eric says, "I'm happy that you're making this move considering the volume of their non-Lux sales has been skewing Lux stats." Lux meaning luxury for you folks that don't know. However, won't Model X and Model S now skew the non-luxury stats? Is there a way to split models into respective categories?
There could be. If someone really wanted to try to define the luxury market in a super fine way, I think you could decide certain pickups belong in there, certain other vehicles. Generally, that's just not how we do it. To us, that's sort of a diminishing returns. You know, the S and the X last year made up less than 4% of Tesla's deliveries. So if it skews the non-Lux stats by a little, it's not going to be by much. And really, you think what we really do, right? We list out the full industry sales. We list them out by brand and by company. And then we do a separate table for luxury. So if you were going to throw those handful of S and X's in there, it's not going to be a very meaningful part of the luxury market. It's not going to be a top 10 brand. But, you know, it could be a cool exercise for some one of our analysts in the audience who wants to do that kind of work.
There you go, Eric. You've got your answer. Coming up, we'll review some of the highlights of the 2024 New York Auto Show with our own Carly Schaffner. That's next on Weekend Drive.
For over 100 years, Ally has helped dealers like you serve your customers by providing the best-in-class products and services you need and by remaining true to the automotive passion we share. Your dedicated Ally account executive will work hand-in-hand with you to help you gain efficiencies, increase your product offerings, and work to improve per-vehicle revenue, because we care about your business as much as you do. We're all better off with an Ally. Contact your local Ally account executive to get started today. Ally, do it right.
Welcome back to Weekend Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. If there was a theme to the 2024 auto show in New York, it may have been the collection of contrasts. Hyundai Motor's Genesis brand, for instance, showed concepts for its volcano-inspired Magma high-performance sub-brand in a signature orange color. A farther-out luxury SUV concept called Neoloon evoked the moon and the cool night sky. Nissan showed off a reworked Kicks, its smallest crossover, while luxury brand Infiniti promoted a beefed-up QX80 designed to challenge the Cadillac Escalade and Lincoln Navigator with its massive grille and imposing presence. Automotive News staff reporter Carly Schaffner was with us this week in New York, and she joins me now to talk about all of that and more. Carly Schaffner, welcome to Weekend Drive.
Hi, Jamie. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. We were just out in New York for the auto show. We're both back in our respective homes again. But, you know, some of the brands you covered, you know, really dominated the scene. It's like it was all about the Hyundai Motor Group, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I finally am adjusting to New York time as I, you know, sit back in California. But yeah, it was definitely a whirlwind. Hyundai took center stage, and not just Hyundai, but Genesis. They had a lot to show us. And then, of course, Kia, which is a separate company from Hyundai, but operated by the Hyundai Motor Group, also showed us some good stuff, too. So absolutely.
Well, I mean, they're separate brands and they compete in a lot of ways, but they share the same engineering, and supply base, and you know, so a lot of things are really shared, although not the management, but as a group, they're really on a roll. I mean, they, as they pointed out several times, you know, they don't like to count Hyundai and Kia together, except sometimes. And as a group, right, they're now the third largest in the world. It's Toyota, Volkswagen, then Hyundai, and then Stellantis. Think back to when we started out in this industry. It's changed so much. It's amazing to think where Hyundai is now as a group.
Yeah, the group has completely surged ahead, and they're actually, all three of them together, are now the number two EV maker behind Tesla, according to registrations in January. But I predict that might stay.
Number two in the U.S.,
correct. Yeah.
Globally, probably BYD will be number one this year, and Tesla will be number two. But yeah, in this market, combined all together, they're bigger now than Ford or GM, with, you know, including Chevrolet, Cadillac, GMC, and soon to be Buick. All right.
Yes, that's right.
So let's turn to the show and dig in a little on the Hyundai brand. They had a couple of refreshes, but maybe hints at a little more than that.
Yeah, we saw a refreshed Tucson compact crossover, which is their number one seller. Last year, it surpassed sales of 200,000 for the first time, and they expect more growth this year. It's the only vehicle with three powertrains, which is part of their strategy to meet customers where they are right now in the market, which they admit that some are still at ICE. They still want gas-powered vehicles, including more rugged off-road type variants. So one thing we did see was a refreshed XRT trim. And then they also showed us the Santa Cruz pickup, which is the lone compact pickup in the industry segment next to the Ford Maverick. So they really have a good foothold there in terms of consumers that want small vehicles. And the refresh on that XRT trim was actually way bigger. They gave it more off-roading capability, including improved approach and departure angle, a new, you know, fiercer grill, bigger wheels, all-terrain tires. So they're really bringing, and the, you know, that both vehicles are important. So they're really focusing on the market now.
And then with the Santa Cruz, when we had Randy Parker on our live chat, he said that, you know, he was asked by, I think it was by a dealer, you know, would they consider a hybrid Santa Cruz? I think kind of thinking maybe to go really toe-to-toe with Ford and the Maverick, which is based on the Escape, much like the Santa Cruz based on the Tucson. And Randy Parker said he'd rather have an electric Santa Cruz. So that could be an interesting development.
Yeah, that was a nice little nugget for us. And I predict in the future that both Kia and Hyundai will enter the segment, the pickup segment, with electric powertrains. So it's along the lines of what we're thinking.
Yeah. He also alluded to possibility of a sub $20,000 EV, which was, I think, another nugget of news, but maybe not all that surprising knowing that Kia has been talking about working on a $25,000 EV. So again, they always ultimately share the powertrains and the platforms. So if Kia can figure it out, Hyundai is going to figure it out. But that's the kind of vehicle that's really going to reshape the market and make EVs really available to a lot more people, even more people than most combustion cars are available to now.
Yeah, that's right. And interestingly enough, talking about shared architecture, we're still waiting to see Hyundai's three-row, which of course Kia has launched the EV9 already. It went on sale last December, and so far sales, you know, they've had good demand. So we're still waiting for that Ioniq 7, which the rumor has it that it's being renamed Ioniq 9. So hearing that they're working on affordable EVs, again, not surprising that we've heard it from Kia, but an interesting kind of timing to let the cat out of the bag there.
Well, then on the other end of the spectrum, Hyundai's luxury brand Genesis had some cool concepts to show. Maybe I should say hot.
Or cold.
Both.
Hot and cold.
Yeah.
Yes. And actually, one of the biggest announcements that they made, aside from the vehicles that we saw, was their intention to create a high-performance sub-brand, and they're calling it Magma. It's represented on the concepts with this fiery orange color that we saw on the GV80 coupe concept that they launched last New York Auto Show, and that we've seen the production version now at the LA Auto Show, and that will go on sale imminently. So they showed that to us. They showed us the X Gran Berlinetta, which was actually more of a design exercise, but that will only be drivable in a video game.
For now. Jose did say they want to do what they can to bring those to market as well. But yeah, that's the video game car.
The video game car. And actually, 2 years ago in LA, we saw a convertible from them, and convertible sedan. And one of the things that tied into the concept I'll get into in a second, the Neolune, was the grill. They said that was going to tease future EVs from the Genesis brand. But at the time, they said that they really wanted to have a flagship sedan. So it might not be the Berlinetta, but I would not be surprised if we see an ultra luxe sedan from them at some point, just as like, you know, this kind of showpiece, but they'll be low volume, of course, but the dealers would love that. So moving on, then we saw the G80, which is their biggest sedan, the Magma version of that, which is going to be made in low numbers for customers in the Middle East. That's kind of all they gave us in terms of production on that. And then we saw the GV60 Magma concept, which is based on their dedicated EV, the GV60. It's a subcompact. It's a little smaller than the GV70 size. It was lower and wider with a fin. It looked great. And that one, they said, will be the most near term as far as production level.
And just to be clear, right, it's Magma with two M's, like from a volcano, not Magna, the supplier, you know, whatever.
Magma.
Right.
Yes, Magma. Everyone was having trouble saying it. But yeah, we did hear from Hyundai's chief creative officer, Luke Dunkervolka, that they used the Magma name partially inspired by the color, the fiery orange color, but also because Korea sits atop a massive volcano. So it's part of the culture. I know they were really just trying to tie in the Korean culture, because a lot of what they were saying was that the brand, or this performance brand, will represent like control on the outside, but then like emotional and enthusiasm on the inside.
Mm-hmm. And power.
And power. Yeah. Yes, of course.
So there was the other Genesis, though, sort of the highlight really was this more far out concept, almost lunar.
Yes. Yeah. And this will be, they said, the next chapter for the brand, because they've really tried to establish themselves as a premium brand in line with rivals. And now they feel like they have momentum there. So they're bringing out this massive full size, and it only had 5 seats, but I assume, and or I guess that it's going to probably be their answer to the 3-row, which is still missing from their lineup. I mean, they have the GV80, but it's pretty compact in terms of space in the rear and the way back. But this had the grill on that we saw on the X convertible concept in LA 2 years ago. It was very, I think they called it reductive design. So it was very minimal in sculpture. It was like sleek. Everything was very flush, including the roof rails, mm-hmm. which I thought that was really cool. They popped in and out. And the sidestep popped in and out and then was flush to the body. It had coach doors.
And the tail lights and the headlights were also flush. I mean, it was really, flush. I don't know if they can do that in a production vehicle, but as a show car, it was pretty impressive.
It definitely wowed. I was very like happy and surprised when I turned around and there it was. And one of the things about the coach doors, which even Jose told us, you know, they've been highlighting it. He loved that. It seemed like they said that the coach doors as a production piece are getting close in development. So saying that might be a possibility because they're really trying to create space on the inside, which is one of the things you can do with EV packaging. So we shall see if that carries forward.
And of course, they prefer the name coach doors to the more vernacular suicide doors.
And that is what I thought when they opened them. I said, oh, it has suicide doors. Cool.
Yeah. They don't want to call them that.
Yeah.
And it does. I mean, it does have sort of that elegance of like the old horse and carriage kind of idea. So I don't know. Maybe they'll bring them into production. They seem overly complicated, but not having that B pillar makes a big difference for ingress and egress. So
yeah,
we'll see.
And that segment is so small right now, so it would certainly make their offering stand out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, so let's wrap up with the sibling brand Kia. As we said, they're you know, like they have the same bones, but they wear different uniforms. so Kia had a new model or a new name for a redesigned model.
Yes. And it's actually a new car. I spoke with Steve Center, the COO of Kia America, and he said this is a new car, but it does fill the Forte's slot in the lineup for the fourth generation of that compact offering, which is actually their number 2 seller. So while Kia and Hyundai are focused on EVs, they both still have entries in the sedan market, which is clutch right now because affordability is such an issue for so many entry-level buyers looking at that segment. So I think the sedan comes at a great time. One of the little nuggets of news they gave us at the press conference was that it'll come in 2 body styles. So we have the conventional sedan and then a sport wagon. And that is targeted at, Steve Center said, the younger buyer that wants room for their friends and their things. So it's not quite a crossover, but it's acknowledging that this younger buyer will be looking in this segment and they'll want more space.
In cars that are that small, I mean, really, you can try to call them a crossover. They're really like station wagons, I think, for the most part, or Sportwagen, you know, if you want to be all German about it. I don't think you said the name. This is the K4.
Oh, this is the K4. Yeah. So it follows in the footsteps of the Optima midsize, which in 2021 turned into the K5. I actually predicted this would be the K3. So, but K4 for Forte, fourth generation.
Yep.
I think that really works for them. And on the note of the sport wagon, some of the sites were also calling it a hatchback as well, but I think wagon is the one that they're really going for.
Any last thoughts on Kia before we wrap up?
No, I think Kia, you know, again, like I said, with sedans, I think it's a really good, it's well-timed for them to come out with it and actually rounds out what we saw in New York from the group. We saw EVs and then from Genesis, we saw crossovers from Hyundai, and then we've seen a sedan from Kia. So it really paints a complete picture of where they're going. And I did want to mention too, as a group, they're building the Meta plant outside Savannah, Georgia, and that has been expedited to open in October, though the battery assembly will lag. And we still don't know what will come first from that. They're kind of holding out in terms of communicating that. But Jose did say they knew, they had decided, but that'll make 6 EVs from all 3 nameplates. So that'll help localize EV production for them in the US.
Yeah, I still find it strange that they put a proper noun on their vehicle assembly plant. But that's what they did. They call it the Meta plant. I guess they thought Tesla was having so much fun with its Gigafactory word, which no longer means anything. It just means a factory owned by Tesla, right? It used to be the battery plant. Now they call everything Gigafactories. These are just marketing
words. Exactly. It's the Kleenex or the Q-tip. I always used to be explaining, you know, what Meta plant is. And so I'm hoping to get to a point where we can just call it Meta plant and everybody knows it's a massive EV and battery assembly complex outside of Savannah, Georgia.
As an editor, I hope that the word Meta plant disappears and we can just call it Hyundai's Georgia plant.
Except for they have, well, I guess we have the Kia plant, but then we have to distinguish between the SK On battery plant, the joint venture plant that they're making as well or building right now. And then of course we have the Montgomery, Alabama plant. So they're really kind of like, you know, laying tracks down south.
Yes, they are. All right. Carly Schaffner, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's all for this weekend drive edition of Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News Coordinating Producer Jake Neer for his help on today's podcast. You can get the latest news on new products, electrification, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back on Monday for a conversation with Honda's Jay Joseph about the automaker's hydrogen strategy.
By around 2030, we seek to have demand for around 60,000 different fuel cell applications per year. So that's going from where we are today in the hundreds per year to tens of thousands per year is a big step. And we have plans to build that business gradually.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. If you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.